You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Come to feel what you need when what you really want inside. You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything that on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you had a good weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. Hoping, too, the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But, of course, if it was not, and it had to be done, you got it done. Especially if you was up in California, man. Man. I tell you, climate change, family. Climate change. Yeah. Got a great program today. Got a young brother named Julian Brown is going to be with us. And I'm going to dispense with the announcements. I'm going to, of course, read the Inyasasim and so forth. But I really want to get him on and to talk about what his creation, what he has invented, what he's discovered, and what he's been able to do, and the benefit to humanity. It was done by Brother Apollo. Brother Apollo works with Brother Moses West and the Moses West Foundation, and you know what great work they do. I'm a contributor to the Moses West Foundation, and I promote them every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on this program and many others. And I tell you, Brother Julian Brown is right there with them to create things that help benefit not just us as a people, but the world, all humanity. So I'm going to go ahead and read the Inyasasim. Also, too, I'm going to announce the other programs that are on Time for an Awakening. I appreciate Time for Awakening. Believe me, I love this platform. It has been able to be on here for quite a few years now. And this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at Time for an Awakening. At the top of the page, you'll see podcast. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Thanks to my good brother, Brother Kwaku. Appreciate you, man. You know it. The other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening on Thursdays from 7 to 9, excuse me, from 7 to 8, from 7 to 8 on Thursdays, Black Liberation Movement, Mississippi on the Move with Brother Patrick Lumumba from the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club in Mississippi. On Fridays from 8 until Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council with Dr. Janine from 7 to 9. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Go right to the Inyasasim so I can get with Brother Young Julian Brown, and hopefully Brother Apollo will call in. All right. Okay. Let me get my glasses here, man. I'll be trying to read stuff without my, damn, he's over 70 years old, dude. Get your glasses. All right. Yesterday, February 4th, a scholar whose lifestyle is inconsistent with the implication of his work and the collective achievement of our people cannot be taken seriously. Ashe, if a scholar's out there and he's talking this and doing that, no, man.
He's counterfeit. He's our contradiction. You know, be a man of your word. Be a woman of your word. Be sincere. We need it. Our people need it. Warriors without ancestral vision cannot find their way to the front line. They may be in a general vicinity, but they are neither actively engaging in the enemy nor is constructive pursuit of sovereignty. Warriorhood is an action verb. However, it is only verbal within the process of bringing clarity, righteous direction, and life to the warrior's actions. At the same time, study is necessary. Our workers must be careful in their study of history because any intellectual effort done without political direction and the intent can limit or nullify this effect. Without a sovereignty-seeking vision, many of our students who gain this knowledge can become circumscribed by a record of whose possibilities for Africans is solely based on a pride of what has already been done. The vision becomes even more damaged if what we have accomplished in the past is articulated as human thing, as a human thing, and that ensuring direction others have taken us from there is inevitable evolutionary evaluation. When progress, even if socially deleterious and slightly misguided spiritually, is automatically defined as good, we lose our ability to subjectively and objectively be African. To be African. The misguided idea of an inclusive humanity of which Africans serve as the accidental womb makes it reasonable, even imperative, to find ways to join ranks with those who seek to destroy us as they celebrate their fabricated humanity and plastic civilization in the name of progress. Affirm, my lifestyle is perfectly aligned with my stated vision, and that is consistent with the positive, productive movement of our people toward African sovereignty. Ashe. Affirm, my lifestyle is perfectly aligned with my stated vision, and that is consistent with the positive, productive movement of our people toward African sovereignty. February 5th. Without a community, you cannot be yourself. The community is where we draw the strength needed to effect change within us. Community is formed each time more than one person or family meet for a purpose. Developing a community depends on what the people involve consent. An African community is a place of self-definition. Any group of people meeting and living together with the intent of connecting to the power within is a community. Most Africans living in America do not live in communities. No, we don't. Instead, we live in neighborhoods. No, we don't even live in neighborhoods. A lot of us are not even neighborly. We live in hoods. So instead, we live in hoods where we are disconnected from each other and there is no communal bond. Brother Mfudishi. Let us build families so strong that the reverberations of the selfless love, uncompromised truth, and unbroken proven trust within them is self-evident to all who can see. Let us build families whose collective work together, our sovereignty is calculated, determined, undaunted, and felt everywhere African people reside. Let us build families with fully, consciously possessed a dynamic, visionary ancestral spirit. Let us build families created solely to set new or old standards of beauty, decency, respect, remembrance, and the power for eternity. Let us build African families. Ashe. Affirm, I live in a community of like minds. Affirm, I live in a community of like minds. Brothers and sisters, the Inya Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Yes. So we got let me get off into our program. People are coming at me with all kinds of other good stuff. Right on. Okay. Brothers and sisters, I thank you so much, and I'm really happy to have Brother Apollo and Brother Brown here. You know, Brother Apollo sent me a nice piece with Brother Brown talking, and I'm not kidding. Every time I click on it, it takes me to Instagram or something, man. And I can't get the piece that he produced, man. But he's holding up the fuel that he transferred from plastics, which is everywhere, to fuel. So, if Brother Apollo, if you're in there, because I got a lot of people on the queue, and I can't decide which one, hit star twice. Brother Julian Brown, if you are there, hit star twice.
Hey, Brother Oshie, how you doing today? Good morning.
This Brother Apollo?
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
Right.
This is Brother Apollo. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine,
hey,
my
this
brother.
This is Julian.
Julian, all right. Oh, are you here in Atlanta?
I'm in Atlanta.
All right, okay. Well, we got to have lunch one time, young man.
Yes, sir.
No doubt about it. You got to have lunch, my brother. All right, we got two dynamic people here. We have Brother Apollo Montessori and Brother Julian Brown. Brother Julian Brown is the young man who has taken plastic, which is all over the place, all on the streets, all discarded in waterways and everywhere else. You know, in fact, there was a thing that you were supposed to do with your trash many years ago was to recycle. They had bins specifically for plastic, you know. And, you know, here in my condo, we don't do that. We just throw the garbage all into one, you know. But I guess wherever the trash is picked up and hauled, they separate it, you know. But how... Brother Julian, tell us about yourself, and thank you, Brother Apollo. You just please hold on, okay?
No problem.
All right. Brother Julian, sure. Tell us about yourself. Give us
so my name is Julian Brown. I'm 20 years old, and in my junior and senior year of high school, I was in a welding program, and being in that welding program, I learned how to create things with metal. I've always been an environmentalist and very passionate about creating solutions to our problems in this world, and learning about the ocean plastics problem and just the plastic waste problem in general gave me the inspiration and the fire and the drive to find a solution to do it in a way that is profitable and works for the world, because it was clear to me that our standard forms of recycling were not working. So I started to study and teach myself just through research papers online this process called pyrolysis, which is the process of heating something up to the point where it breaks down within an environment that has no oxygen in it. And that stops something from burning or catching on fire, which, as we know, when plastics burn or catch on fire, they're very toxic. But this process is quite literally the opposite of that. It's very controlled. We can control every single thing that we put in, every single thing that we get out. And on top of that, this process actually ends up not only getting rid of plastic waste, this thing that we've had such issues with, but the byproducts are actually fuels that run our world.
That is fantastic, man. You know, I'm a retired firefighter. I was a firefighter for over 30 years. And
thank you for your service.
Thank you. And I tell you, one of the byproducts, of course, of fire is that smoke. And one of the things that was probably most dangerous to us was plastic fires. I mean, you know, wood, you could, if there was just all wood and maybe some cotton or something like the Excelsior or something like that, you could actually go in there without a mask and function for a bit and extinguish the fire. But if it's plastics and you would go into that particular environment without a mask, you wouldn't last but seconds, if that. It's that, you know, that dangerous. And so I recognize, you know, what you are doing and what you have done is just phenomenal, you know. And considering that you've done this, you're only 20 years old, and so basically, you just had the impetus and the spirit to go online to learn about this. Is that correct?
Yes.
Man, see, that's the thing. Online, you can put in some words in a search or whatever. You can find out any and everything that you need. You know, wow. And so plastic, which is all over, all in landfills, all in so forth, you could take those plastics and as you said, you can break them down. Now, when you heat them, what kind of furnace are you heating them in?
That's a great question there, and that's where this technology starts to become to the point where, on my end of things, it's an innovation. So the process of pyrolysis has been around since the beginning of Earth. It's actually what Earth uses to turn biomass like algae into crude oil to begin with, right? And we as humans have been trying to adopt it and use it efficiently for hundreds of years now. And traditionally, what we use to heat up these reactors to then turn the plastic into fuel has been just, you know, a fire or maybe some resistive coils like an oven heating element, so that type of thing. But I've done that, and doing that, I realized how inefficient it is because though all of these types of external heat forms, the heat has to travel from the actual heat source into the body of the reactor, then into the plastic. So through research and innovative thinking, I saw that, you know, when we heat things up in our house to cook food and such, the quickest and most efficient thing is the microwave. So I actually, in my machines, utilized microwave heating to break down the plastics and turn them into fuel.
So you put them in a microwave oven, the plastics.
Not a microwave oven, but a microwave reactor.
Reactor, okay. A microwave reactor. Okay. And that shoots those heat waves in, and that breaks all of that stuff down. And it liquefies it?
Yeah, so essentially, think about it like this. Think about it like water is, the thought of from water is ice, right? Mm-hmm. And we can melt that ice into liquid water, and then we can also continue to heat it up, and then that will eventually turn into steam.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's essentially what we're doing here, because since the plastic has no oxygen available to it, it does not catch on fire and combust. Instead, it does eventually completely melt into a liquid, and then that liquid turns into vapor. And plastic is made of crude oil. So that vapor is no longer plastic. It is of actually the vapor form of crude oil. We're reverse engineering plastic on a molecular level.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, man. And what kind of fuel is it? Diesel? Is it what kind of fuel is it, or can it be? I mean, obviously, with additives to it, it can be whatever.
So plastic comes from crude oil, right?
Okay.
And it's essentially a solid form of crude oil. From crude oil alone, we get every single fuel that we run our world off of.
Okay.
And plastic, being a solid form of that, it is capable of yielding every single fuel that comes from crude oil. I have gotten gasoline from plastic, I've gotten diesel from plastic, and I've gotten jet fuel, all from plastic.
Wow. And this kind of recycling of plastic, that, you know, because what does it say? What did it say about fuel? That because it's fossil fuels will run out. It's an exhaustible energy source. Correct? That's what was said.
Right.
And what you have proven that it is not, because
exactly.
Because we have, I mean, they've been making plastics, things out of plastics, containers, and, I mean, all kinds of stuff for, I don't know, maybe 100 years. I'll say this, over 70 years since me as a kid, I'm over 70 years old. I can remember things starting to, you know, in plastics. And so what you've been able to do is Now, with the issue, though, the issue, Brother Julian, is climate change and these fuels, the byproduct is you know, the smoke and so forth, and that has been detrimental to us as human beings and to the planet. Is there still that issue with what you have been able to do?
So, yes, these are fuels, combustible fuels, and there's no matter what you do, if there's a fuel that combusts, it will emit CO2. Mm-hmm. However, on the other side, if we put together the pros and cons, it actually is far more detrimental to our planet and to climate change to leave the plastics in the ocean. And I'll explain to you why.
Yes.
I'll explain to you why. So first off, there is a scientific research paper that you can find online that goes over scientists basically studied plastic being left in the environment, left in the oceans, left in the landfills, and what happens as it's just left there. And plastic over time photo degrades. So the sun slowly breaks it down. And as the sun does that, this plastic actually emits methane and ethylene, which are two greenhouse gases far worse than CO2. For example, methane is 40 times worse than CO2 in the air. Right. So if we just leave it in our oceans and landfills like we've been doing, it's emitting horrible amounts of greenhouse gases, way worse than CO2. Here's the thing. If we turn this plastic into fuel, because mind you, the machine itself has zero emissions. The machine itself creates zero waste. The only emissions come from burning the products of it, right? Our engines nowadays are so modern, and we have catalytic converters at the end of our cars, which end up pretty much making it so the proper fuel that's EPA rated and the proper types of engines, the only emissions out of the exhaust are pretty much just CO2 and water vapor. Now, CO2, carbon dioxide, is what we're all told is the big bad boy.
Right.
And really, it's these other gases that are, because carbon dioxide actually can be captured by trees. It can also be turned into soft carbon and buried in the ground as biochar. So there are things we can do to actually sequester and get CO2 out of the air, things that we should be doing anyway, like planting trees, right?
Right.
Once methane and ethylene go in the air, they're pretty much up there. And you know, that's pretty much trapped, and that's the lost stuff that we can never really recover that's just contributing to climate change.
Because carbon dioxide, CO2, you know, is been emitting for eternity. And trees would take in carbon dioxide and give off oxygen, which is what we need as human beings, because we take in oxygen and we emit carbon dioxide.
Right.
You know, and so it's, man, this is just phenomenal, brother. This is great. And so now we have the ability to utilize carbon dioxide much more effective, but more importantly, to diminish carbon monoxide, you know, because carbon monoxide is just a very dangerous gas, you know, colorless, odorless, tasteless. Carbon monoxide, I've as a firefighter, you know, I've been to some calls where some people who have didn't ventilate their homes properly using space heaters or other kind of heaters with fuel and succumb to carbon monoxide poisoning. You know, some have died, and that's really, really scary, you know. In fact, I went to one home that one time, never forget it, because there were a number of people in the home. And luckily, one of the young men who was living there, he woke up for whatever reason, seeing how his other siblings and parents were looking, and knocked on a neighbor door. They called. We were about less than a quarter mile away. Got there immediately, and me and my crew, we just started just taking the people outside, man. You know. And then the the ambulance and the paramedics came and started taking them to the hospital and into those hyperbaric chambers to infuse them with air. And it's sad, you know, but it happens.
Right.
You know, it happens all the time. You know, people sitting in the garage with their car on, you know, some of them doing it intentionally, you know. So, but what you have been able to do is to recycle that carbon dioxide and diminish its effect on as a greenhouse gas, because that is the real issue as the planet is moving forward. As you can see, the erratic weather patterns that are happening, you know.
Absolutely.
Just look at here, you know. In fact, somebody said, well, you know, it's really, really cold, so now what's up with climate change? Well, what's up with climate change is this. It's extreme weather patterns. It doesn't mean, because, you know, we first started calling it global warming because the planet was warming, and it has, and it is, you know. But what was not understood is that because of this situation, there will be extreme weather patterns, more colder days, longer colder days, more hot days, longer hotter days, you know. And I remember I went down to Texas, man. I had to go down to Texas, and this is like, oh, this is the same time that that the verdict for the young brother Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin, happened, and they let that cat go. That I never forget that because I was down there at the time. But they were experiencing in that month 40 straight days of over 100 degrees. I'm like, man, I couldn't live here. Over 40 straight days of 100 degrees on the
wow.
Yeah. And I'm quite sure those were some expensive electric bills too. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So what gave you this idea? How did this idea come into your mind?
So I saw it like this. It all started by just asking the question why. So mm-hmm. It all started when I was in environmental science class in 10th grade, and we saw the video of the sea turtle that had the plastic straw stuck in its nose, and it was so sad. So then I looked at that, and I asked myself, okay, so there's all these plastics in the ocean. Why aren't they being recycled? So I looked that up, and I saw, okay, why are regular recyclable plastics not being turned into, like, new, you know, recyclable plastics? Well, it's because when you turn, like, a plastic bottle into another plastic bottle, it loses quality. There's so many processes it has to go through. It's really not even worth it monetarily,
okay, from
right?
Right, that's the issue. It's about money. Okay.
And the mm-hmm. truth of the matter is less than 5% of all plastics actually get recycled. So that means that if you put plastics in your recycle bin, there's a high chance that more than likely they're not going to get recycled. And on top of that, most plastics that are recycled are pre-consumer level plastics, meaning it's not your plastic you're putting in the recycle bin, but it's plastic from machines like the shreddings and the filings that are clean already. Because another big reason why plastic is not recycled is because the regular way to turn like one plastic into another piece of plastic, it needs to be clean. And almost every piece of plastic after it's used, it has oils or food debris, or it's dirty, right? So that's why the plastics are not being recycled. It doesn't make money sense, it's too hard to do, all these things. So then I ask, okay, well, what is a way that we can bypass all of that? What is a way that I can just put any type of plastic into something and just destroy it all, no matter what it is, no matter what type of dirt it has on it? And then the first thing that came to my mind, the universal destroyer is fire and heat, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, you can't just burn the plastics, or they make tons. You know yourself because you're a fireman. It's extremely dangerous. Mm-hmm. So it needs to be more controlled than a fire. And the next best step after that, continue to do research and just look up, like, what is a fire without a fire? That's literally the form of pyrolysis. And in Greek, pyrolysis breaks down to pyro and lysis. Pyro means heat, and lysis means to break apart. So you're just breaking apart something with purely heat. A fire is an oxidation reaction, which means it actually is being broken apart by oxygen. And we have that fire, which continues to burn it and react to things with oxygen. But that's not what we're doing with pyrolysis.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Pyrolysis. That's the deal. That's the method being used to make this happen. And I see plastic to fuel the pyrolysis for automotive transportation and the natural. Okay. Jab and okay. I've seen the piece that Apollo sent me, you know, announcing it, and it looks good, man. It really does. But the machine, I'll tell you, that you have, it looks like you put it together through a lot of spare parts.
So, yes, that machine, I've built all of these things by myself, wow. Handmade in my parents' backyard.
Wow.
Right? Off of scrapyard parts. So I literally would take parts. I would go to my scrapyard and find microwave ovens that people threw away. I would collect them and take the parts, the electronics out of them.
Okay.
And I built my machine itself out of propane tanks. So everything I've done up to this point has been extremely amateur and homemade. And even at that, I've gotten very respectable figures and numbers off of the efficiencies of the microwave pyrolysis. So I always tell people, just imagine when I have the parts designed for
yes.
this, the machines designed yeah. for this. This will get to a point where it's absolutely irrefutable that this has the potential to completely change the industry and be completely monetarily and energetically profitable.
Wow. Well, brothers and sisters, as you're listening to this, tell others this young man needs to be supported. In fact, it looks like if you would invest, that might be something that might be paying off in the near future. Won't be something that you can talk about later, because he has something that I think needs to be dealt with now, you know.
Indeed.
Something that should be dealt with now. It should be fast-tracked from these corporations to develop this. Just like Brother Moses West and what he has done with the atmospheric water generator, the AWG. Because the AWG is another thing that is extraordinary. You know, but you know what, though, brother? Let me say this to you, son, because I know you're 20 years old and I'm way older. I admire and respect you tremendously. You're part of the African genius that we've always had from the very beginning. In fact, in spite of slavery, discrimination, all of those things, humiliation, we still rise. We still were able. I know since you have done what you've done, you know the number of inventions that we have created. And I know this is American, I call it African and American African History Month. And in this month, Carter G. Woodson started it because he understood that they would not talk about the things that we have done as a people, because they wanted us to believe that we've never done anything. They wanted us to believe, son, that we were running around the jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose, never having created anything of significance of any kind. And nothing could be furthest from the truth. We created it all. In fact, even today, there's still a debate about ancient Kemet, or what the Greeks called Egypt, whether it was black or not. Hell yeah, it was black. Dr. Sheikh Anta Jop, Dr. Jop proved it was black. He created the melanin dosage test, which became the smoking gun to prove that. In 1974, the debate is won, but still today, to this moment, they still, you know, don't want to give us the credit. And there's many people in Egypt today who are very upset that the History Channel had a series on Cleopatra, making her look mulatto. And that she probably was. But you know what? I don't give a damn about the Ptolemies or the Cleopatra. I'm talking about ancient. I'm talking about the dynastic period. That was us. And everything was done prior to that. All those creations, all those inventions. And so you, son, are in line with that genius. Those ancestors touched you to do what you have done. And I'm so proud of you, man. I really am. And there should be so many people meeting with you, wanting to meet with you to help. Because what Moses has done and what you have done is going to help humanity. It's going to help everybody.
Right.
You know?
This is for the world.
Yeah. I mean, I saw a piece. There's a young man who was collecting plastics in the ocean. There, I don't know, and obviously you would know. There's areas in the oceans, in the Pacific, in the Atlantic, and possibly also too, and all of them in the Indian Ocean, where there's a big area of pooling of plastics that are floating, you know, on the top of the ocean, you know. And so they developed big nets or so forth where you can, you know, pick up all of it, skim it off the top, and then put it on a barge and then take it wherever, you know. But for you and what you do, you have plenty of material for you to turn into fuel, don't you?
Oh, yes.
Man, plenty. So, you know, what your invention has done, and so does Moses, because what Moses has is in the air. It's in the air.
Right. Abundant.
You know? Abundant. Abundantly. It's in the air. You just take it out of the air, go through a filterization, a purification process, turn the tap on, bam, clean water. You know? So, man, I tell you, this is fantastic. In about another 10 minutes, we're going to continue the conversation. I'll take a break. And when we come back, I'm going to ask those listeners to talk with you, man, to find out from you, you know, how you created and what you've done and what you plan to do. And, yeah, your future is seriously bright, man. In fact, go ahead, son.
When we were talking about how much plastic is in the ocean and just these continents of plastic, I've done these numbers and the math on that. And there's enough plastic in our oceans for if we were to turn it all into oil, we would have enough oil to run the entire world for over 30 years.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. And considering to make these fuels now, because see what you're saying to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, and please make it clear to our listeners that the possibility of these creations will not have the deleterious effect that the old fuels have had, creating the carbon monoxide, creating the carbon dioxide, creating all of these other things, which has caused this climate to have an effect that it has. Am I correct?
I'll say it like this. In order for us to get crude oil from wherever we get it from, wherever we import it from other countries or from other states or from the oceans, there are a ton of logistics. We have to get the big drills up there. We have to mine. We have to frack. Then we have to collect it. Then we have to ship it. And then we have to put it through the pipelines. And then we have to put it into the refineries. And those refineries have to put it into the trucks to take it to the gas stations. This machine is proposing cutting off half of those logistics.
Wow, that's grand, man.
Proposing you can take your plastic right there. Think about all the emissions that come from having to take our plastics and collect them from our trash bins, take them to the landfills. We literally will fill up barges full of plastic and ship them across the world to Asian nations,
right,
to African nations, to dump them there. We don't
right.
have to even do that anymore because we can process it right there and then take it to refineries right there And then it could be in the same block, the refinery, the machine, and the gas station. And it's just all done right there.
So you can collect those and create the finished product right in the same vicinity, or right in the same. Yeah. Wow.
So there will be far less emissions because there's far less logistics.
So how bad would the, since that would be decreased, so obviously the emissions won't be as bad as they have been to cause the issue and problems that they have caused. So this is safer. Now, what about the fuel? Yes. What about the fuel itself? Is it still efficient? Will it continue to be the internal? You still use an internal combustion engine?
Oh, yes. Let me tell you something, brother. Just recently, we made an absolute huge achievement in the project. So a few years ago, I ran the first ever gasoline engine off of the gasoline I made from plastic. It was in a weed whacker, 2-stroke and 4-stroke. We tried both. It worked great. After that, we tried the diesel for the first time in a diesel go-kart engine, a small little diesel go-kart engine. But just this Saturday, we, for the first time, ran a diesel engine off of the diesel made from plastic waste, and it burned perfectly. The engine sounded just as great. And everybody around, you know what they actually said? Everybody around said, the exhaust actually smells better than the real diesel.
Wow. Man. Yeah, the alternative to burning fuels, and particularly the main thing that we burn fuels is gasoline for our cars. You know, it was always interesting to me, and I know that leaded gas gave off an exhaust that was very damaging. And in fact, upon inhaling it over a long period of time could cause some mental issues. That's why, they started to build these barriers along the interstates, you know, when they didn't have the cleaner burning fuels, you know. But what you're saying is phenomenal because, you know, these things don't burn like that anymore, and it's safer to use. And because we changed, which we said, well, we can't use these fuels no more. Exxon, Mobil, GP, all of these stations, they can't use these fuels no more. And of course, they started building electric cars. In fact, the whole idea was that in the next number of years, very, very soon, mostly all the cars would be electric cars. But then this winter, there was a serious part of winter coming down out of Canada and out of, you know, from the North Pole, moving all the way down, these Alberta Clippers, all the way down into here in Georgia, as you know. But definitely in, let's just take the United States, in the Midwest and in the Northeast. And so those electric cars could not function.
Right.
They couldn't start. It was extremely long time to charge them up, and they would lose 40% of what you did to charge it. So even though you charged it 100%, you only got 60, you know, and your ability to travel. And then if your ability to travel now is hampered and you don't know, you know, you're afraid to start traveling because you may not be able to find another electric, station. So, man, so cars in the Midwest were suffering, although cars in the South, particularly south of you know, Georgia here and Florida particularly and Louisiana, those cars were running. Texas were, but other places, they were not. But, of course, those gasoline-powered cars were running. You know.
Hey, Brother Oshie, can I add one thing too as well?
Oh, sure, Brother Apollo. Thank you.
So
from an international perspective, right, there are still countries that use diesel all over for everything, mm-hmm. from powering their homes mm-hmm. to heating their homes to moving their vehicles. And these, some of the places that Julian mentioned specifically as well, are the places where that plastic from foreign countries is dumped. And so by implementing some of these changes, it gives them a form of autonomy where not just the Middle East is a producer of fuel.
Right on.
Places like these countries can then build their own jobs, form their own workforce, and so forth. By this, think of the GDP of a country going up while reducing all by if you have 80,000 hectares of landfills, you now have 10,000 hectares of landfills because you got all the plastic out of it and turned that into revenue for the country.
Man, right on. Once again, we create a game changer. You know, we create a game changer. The African genius, I tell you. And I'm so glad that, you know, that we're presenting this to the world at a time that is so desperate and so needed, you know. Yeah. So, are you willing to sell this or partner with the big oil companies for their input or production, or is it something is it something that you're looking to develop independent of them, so that smaller companies and investors can take advantage? Because, you know, that's one of the things always that happens within the capitalist society is monopolies, you know?
Yes, and the goal is, ultimately, I am going to develop this company, Nature Jab, to be a manufacturer of these machines, small and large,
okay.
for small and large businesses to buy, for governments to buy. If that's what they want, because ultimately the goal is not to have one big centralized machine, because that kind of defeats the whole point of what I was saying to you earlier.
Right.
We'll have many machines scattered in every single country, in every single province, in every single city on earth. So that way we can deal with plastic waste at the roots, at the source of the issue.
Right.
Ultimately, you know, I don't have no issue collaborating with other existing corporations to, you know, to better this machine. But ultimately, the goal is for this company, Nature Jab, to be its own entity that supplies and manufactures these machines for the whole world to have access to.
Mm-hmm. Nature Jab. Where did you come up with that?
Well, Jab, those are my initials, Julian Alexander Brown.
Oh, okay. And yeah,
you put it together. I'm fighting for nature. You know, it's like the punch in boxing,
right.
the jab.
And I see that.
I'm also
you had
a black belt in karate.
Yeah, you see, you have that nature jab, that fist coming right at you. Love like her. Yeah,
exactly.
Love
and
it.
I'm also a black belt in karate, and that's what I used to be called back when I was I was a karate assistant teacher for a little bit, and everybody would call me Mr. Jab.
Okay.
It was fitting in that sense, too. So just put the two together, Nature
right
Jab.
Right on. Yes, sir. Nature Jab. And so I'm going to take a break. When we come back from the break, I'm going to open up the phone line, so anybody who's out there who want to continue this conversation or want to talk with Julian Brown or even Brother Apollo to find out what Moses West is doing, you know, you're on the line with him, and this is just, you know, groundbreaking stuff here, brothers and sisters. These young men and Brother Moses have done great things for humanity to provide water, which is essential for life, which is to buy fuel, which is also a necessity for life in every part of the world, you know? So we're going to do that. We're going to take a break. And when we come back from the break, we're going to continue the conversation with Brother Julian Brown, brother who has created the ability to take plastic that's just all over and break it down and turn it into fuel. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspective. That was Bobby Lyle from his Ivory Flows CD. That's Hello Maceo featuring Marcus Miller, Joel Albright, Kurt Wallheim, and Najee. Outstanding piece. We're here talking today with a young brother who is on the case, man. Brother Brown, I tell you, man, I'm impressed. And we got, we also have Brother Apollo with us. And you too, family. You know, but Brother Julian Brown is just fantastic. So getting on this conversation, you can dial 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. There's a number of you already in the queue. So, Mama Nabantu, good afternoon. How are you, my sister?
Oh, you catch me as soon as I jump in.
Yes.
Yes, I was trying to get to this call. I had some other things in before you. But so what's the conversation today?
We're talking with Brother Julian Brown, this young man, along with Moses West. These two geniuses, the African genius, have created a mechanism by way to help all humanity. Brother Moses West, of course, was the Moses West Foundation, and he has created the atmospheric water generator, which takes moisture out of the air, which is all around us. So, no, water is the only problem with water is the access to water. There's no shortage of water. Yes, climate change has caused a lot of reservoirs and rivers and so forth to start drying up, but water's in the air, and he has created that that process. But Brother Julian Brown also has had a process, and that is to use plastics that are all around in waste and to create fuel oil from plastics to fuel.
Let me just say this. The universe must really work. I just saw the video on, I guess it was Julian Brown, with the fuel from plastic.
Yes.
I just sent a text to Quilombo because their children did a skit on water cycles. Mm-hmm. And I said, you need to go to Moses West Foundation and share with these students how moisture from the air can bring about quality water through the invention of
right.
Moses West. Just did that within the last half hour.
Beautiful. Well, hey, help him to Julian
right
Brown too, because he's Julian Brown is here in Atlanta, and I'm looking forward to meeting him, sitting down, breaking some bread with this young man, and talking further with him and what he plans to do. You know, because the process of oil is very, very expensive, and what he has been able to do, basically cut that in half. You can, right where all the plastic is, gather up all of the waterways and out of the landfills and so forth, build a factory right there to burn it, and then to extract it and then to use it. It's right there. So let me get
somebody from the Pan and African Fellows movement just sent me the video,
mm-hmm.
and I just finished looking at it. So is Julian there on your call right
yes,
now?
Yes, he is, Brother Julian.
Hi, nice to meet you.
This is Mama Nabantu. This is Brother Julian Brown. He's here in Atlanta. He's here in Atlanta too.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. He's got to go over and talk to the children at Quilombo.
Yeah.
So they need to know, and they need to know about Moses West and some of our recent Black inventors.
Mm-hmm.
And so children are dealing with old information. They need this new information. So I want to know, Mr. Brown, where are you going to go with this? I mean, who's taking this on?
Well, the goal with this is to get these machines in every single country, city, and province on Earth so that way we can deal with plastic waste, cut off the roots at the source, and get rid of every single ocean plastic, and not only take them out of the ocean and deal with them, but prevent them from even being put there to begin with, because plastic will be seen as money and energy.
So you have a machine?
He created,
yes.
Mama Nabantu, this young man created it with scrap. If you look at the yes.
Hey, bomb in the box, if I could real quick. So Julian not only
this is Brother Apollo. This is Brother Apollo.
Oh yeah, hey bomb in the box. Good to see you again. It's Apollo here. Yeah, Julian's made four different versions of this machine, iterations of it. And he's even received attention and recognition from some members of the UN for some of the things he's doing as of now.
Wow, beautiful.
Oh, so where is his security?
Yeah,
well,
that's
why we're here, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we got to come up with a whole security force to protect our brothers and sisters who are coming up with these inventions that's going to knock, you know, these folks want to make money.
Yeah.
And anytime you come up with something as easy as that to do, they want to stop it. So I'm just suggesting that, you know, we need a cadre of security officers to protect these brothers and sisters who are coming up with these amazing inventions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got to, so they can function. Freely function and do the life-sustaining work that they have been able to create. I mean, this is fantastic, you know.
I have another brother that's come up with an invention where it's a solar generator that needs nothing but water. I need to bring him on the show.
Yeah.
Need to have
find him. Yeah. So he's created a generator that uses nothing but steam, water. Creates steam and it powers it.
Oh, remote control. You have a remote control. It can go anywhere in the house or outside in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. Amazing. He's in Arkansas.
Okay. Yeah, as I was, Mama Nabantu, as I was saying to Brother Julian and of course, Apollo and to our listeners, to African Genius, you know, this being Black History Month, and we focus in on some great men and women who created all kinds of inventions out of necessity, you know.
Right.
Or as I used to say, out of a better way to do things. You know, the sister who created the baby carriage, the sister who created the ironing board, the brother who created the lawnmower, all of these things. We've done all of these things. This is a matter of fact, you know, because sometimes we were toiling, whatever, and we said, it's got to be a better way to do this. And, of course.
And they're trying to keep it from our children.
So.
No more books like that can go in public school libraries, especially in Florida.
Yeah.
Going across the
Ron DeSantis is a serious idiot, you know.
Oh, my God, yeah.
But the bottom line is that we continue to rise, you know. We continue to rise. And Brother Julian Brown is one of those young men who are definitely on the rise, for what he has done, you know.
Thank you.
You're welcome, son. You're definitely welcome. Brother Irv, good afternoon. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Baba Oshi. Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate that. Look, I am listening to these brothers talk about what they've invented. This right here is amazing to me. It's more than that. It's showing that the African mind, the same mind that has mapped out the stars, the same mind that has created pyramids, which they still don't understand to this day. We can't be stopped. And what you're doing, what you've done, and you know, you want to say, oh, well, you know, Urugu, he knew this. He already knew about this. I don't think he did.
No.
I don't think he knew about it, because if he knew about it, exactly, he would have monetized it.
Exactly.
Come on now.
Yeah.
Stay with me, my brother. They would have monetized it and made as much money as they can with it, then they would have threw it away. But you have tapped into something that is so important, especially to our people, because that's in a capitalist society, the money is what makes the difference. And they don't look at things as saving the planet. They look at things as having more money. This country does. That's what we're fighting for. We're fighting over fuel, gold, and all that type of stuff. So you tapped into something. I am excited about this. I'm excited about you, and I really commend you for what you've done, and I really do, and everything that you're about to do, because this is huge. I'm not going to say it's bigger than you know, because I think you know. I think you know the the mark that you're making right now, something that's going to last far beyond when you're gone. This is this what you're doing is still going to be here for our children's children's children. So, brother, thank you so much, and God bless you for what you're doing. And sky's the limit, man. That's just all I got to say. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Right on earth.
Thank you so much.
Also,
God bless
too.
You as well.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, son.
Yeah, I was saying thank you as well for your support and belief in me, and God bless you as well, brother.
And
so how long is the pack?
Go ahead, Mama Nabantu. Go ahead.
I'm sorry to be interjecting like this. Excuse me. I'm so excited. You have a patent, right?
Yes, my unique design is patent.
I didn't hear all that
She didn't hear that, Brother Julian.
My design is patent pending.
It's pending.
Oh,
okay,
it's patent.
It's pending.
Mm-hmm. I got you. So once it's approved, you hold on it for, is it 10 years?
I can't recall that off the top of my head on how long I held on to it, but this is just the patent on this design. I will continuously come up with different designs. I can continue to patent.
Okay,
so you'll be getting patents for other designs as well.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Well, one thing that you brought up, Mama Nabantu, and others, is the safety of these young people. And the safety of Brother Moses West, that, you know, we got to have some brothers who are willing, man, to check on these cats and make sure that they're safe, because it's a crazy ass world that we live in. You know, this past weekend, I had Brother Ayo Kamathi, and he wrote a book called Jews Are the Problem. And when you look at the history of the situation, they are a problem. And there's no doubt about it that this brother's safety is in question, because look what's happening in Israel now, or in Palestine right now. You know, they don't give a damn. They're going to wipe these people out. What you're seeing right before your very eyes, a true act of genocide, right before your very eyes. You've heard about it. You've heard about it with the indigenous people. You can see what has happened to them. You heard about it with Jews themselves. In Europe, the attempt of genocide, because there have been acts of genocide where people truly have been wiped out. In the Caribbean, the Aqua Indians were wiped out in what is now Australia and New Zealand. Some of those people were wiped out, you know. So I'm saying, you know, you got to protect yourself. You got to protect your intellectual properties that you create. You got to protect all of that, you know, because we live in a crazy world. Let me get Brother Lusk in there. Brother Lusk, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Bubba Oshie, and good afternoon to your guests, particularly that young man who has been doing the necessary work. I'd like to also include him in on an ancestor, if I may, that maybe not very many people know of. And that ancestor, by the way, is by the name of Charles Frederick Page. And he would have been that forgotten black aviator who created an airship way before the Wright brothers, believe it or not. And so it's good to hear the voices of the new up-and-coming age of inventors, and I wish you all the best in your endeavors, as well as with Brother Moses and his work and what he's doing as well. So thank you for picking my call.
Right on. Thank you, brother. Thank you, Brother Love. Appreciate you, man. Yeah. Peace. Yeah. You know, I worked with kids before I moved here to Atlanta, because as a firefighter, I work one day and I'm off too. And so on my off days, I went to schools and talked with kids about a number of things. And, of course, always in the month of February, I brought out the history. I brought out the black inventors and so forth, you know, because it is a miracle that some people who thought that we had no intellectual capabilities, we didn't invent anything. In fact, we were denied patents. You know. because and we had to have the European or Caucasian or your whatever, he or she would present the patent and we'll get to. That's just like, to me, Eli Whitney. I don't believe Eli Whitney invented no damn cotton gin. You know what I'm saying? Because he wasn't doing shit. He wasn't in them fields, you know? Just like I said, you know, the cat that invented the lawnmower. I always think and picture him working in that field with a sickle. You know what a sickle is, right? It's handle and a stem and a blade that is flat. And you whisk and you just whoosh, whoosh. And that's what you would cut the brush and cut the grass with. And having been in toiling in that sun all day, he said, you know what? I could take this blade and put it with two other blades and spiral it, put them on a wheel, and bam, lawnmower, you know? Or the sister with the baby carriage. She having two or three kids and all in her arms. Like, damn, I'm so tired of these kids. I can put them into a wagon or a baby carriage and push them around. Bam. Always a better way to do things. And we've had that kind of genius. And you, Brother Julian Brown, you come up with looking at the problem of all this waste and realizing, too, that there's a mechanism by which you can make fuel oil, gasoline, diesel fuel, you know, from that waste. And it will burn cleaner, you know. Have the byproduct, the fuel, has it been tested by the EPA?
No, and that's going to be the goal of my first ever industrial big machine, because it's always been the issue of so many variables at these homemade machines. I haven't been able to give a truly consistent product in for testing, but when I built my next machine, my first ever industrial one this summer, Mark V, going to emphasize
the Mark V, huh? Okay. Yeah. And then you're going to get it, have it tested by the EPA.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Man. So where do you plan to build the machine?
It's going to be, I plan to build it here in Georgia.
Okay. Okay.
Yep. Not far from Atlanta.
How are you? Are you born in it? Were you born here?
Oh, I was born in Tennessee.
Okay.
But not far.
Okay. And how long have you been in the ATL?
I've been here for, at this point, 13 years, so
okay.
I'm pretty much.
Yeah, you went to school here?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did you live here in Atlanta, or did you live in another county?
I've been in Douglas County.
Douglas County? Okay, yep. Douglasville or Douglas County?
Douglasville, in Douglas County.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. I'm familiar. You know, that's the thing about living here in Atlanta. You know, people say, well, I live in Atlanta. Well, more than likely you don't, because
right.
Atlanta is really small in size and population, but
right.
The metropolitan area is huge. You got
right.
Fulton County, which is the majority of Atlanta. You got DeKalb County. You got Clayton, Cobb, and Gwinnett, you know. And all of them share a little piece of the city of Atlanta. You know, I live in Atlanta. I live right here on Cascade, right across the street from John White Park, right on Cascade where Abernathy turns off and goes towards MLK to where I live, which is near the West End, which I talk about often, you know, and I'll also talk about the gentrification that is happening here. So, yeah. But, yeah, man, so I got to get your number so we can set it up and break some bread, maybe go to the beautiful restaurant and some places maybe you never have been here in Atlanta, and that would be great. And talk about, too, have you been approached by some brothers or sisters who are talking about investing in what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure – between Apollo, we definitely can get the my number to you, and we should absolutely meet there. In terms of investment, right now, I'm at the phase right now where
I am absolutely doing my part to retain as much of this as I can, as much ownership, because that's going to be very important. So I'm at this point where I'm looking to raise money in different routes. For example, I do have a GoFundMe, and ultimately, I think that's going to be what's the best for this project, because we have to remember that the world we live in, and with it being so capitalistic,
yes.
If this is given in the wrong hands, it's just going to end up like every single thing else, which is not done for the right purpose. It's done just to make money, and it's just going to turn,
because
it's going to be corrupted. We don't want that.
Thank you, my brother. Thank you, and have that heart and that, and that spirit, because it's just like Moses. In Flint, he had a partner who wanted to monetize everything. I mean, water is essential. Water is a necessity for human life. And Moses did not want to monetize it. So they broke, and in fact, Brother Apollo, come on in here. How's it going in Jackson, Mississippi, in Flint and so forth, with where the AWGs are located? How's it going?
So, and I appreciate you, Brother Oshie. Thank you. With what Moses is focusing on now, he just recently did a teaching session at Loyola University in Chicago. One of his focuses is sharing information with people about how to produce water and how these units work. And so I think it was like 17 to 18 minutes where he was explaining about sorbents and atmosphere of water generators as a whole.
Okay.
And in relation to Jackson and the other areas throughout the country, what we've done is we were notified about a grant that is specifically for alleviating some of the problems that exist in some of these areas and solutions that may exist to it. And so we're working with several different cities, municipalities, and things like that to present the right information for them to be able to go and apply for funding to get these AWG units and municipalities near them.
Ashek, great. Fantastic. I mean, I know that the range of what you can do, you can build one that can be just for a family or a community.
Yes, sir.
A small community.
We have one that's the AWG 800 does about from 211 to 600 gallons of water a day. Then we have the AWG 5000 that does upwards of 5,000 gallons of water a day.
Wow.
And then also we have customized facilities, and where, let's say there's an industrial location, like for instance, the manufacturing of plastics. It's a water intensive process as well in order to like form these things and make these things and so forth. And so one of the things is that organizations and facilities like that are using infrastructure or what you would call city water.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot that could go into taking them off of city water. There's a lot that can go to be said about like microchip factories, for example. They require pure water to produce these chips. Like there's a certain filtration, polishing, and parts per million number that has to be met. In relation, or parts per trillion number, actually, that has to be met in order for that water to be used on microchips.
Oh, wow.
To avoid contamination of any sort.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so when the companies like that use city water, they have to, it's a very expensive and costly process.
Because they got to go through another whole process, even though the city water supposedly is supposed to be safe to drink and so forth, but there's still another process that it has to go through to make it safe for the processing of okay.
Exactly. Man. And so when you produce water with nothing else but water molecules, different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's different. It cuts out a whole lot of steps. And so, our focus on everything as a whole is overall, sustainability and resiliency planning. And much of what, the things that we focus on today, like Julian's technology, like the AWG technology, and like the various other things that many of the people that we met in Atlanta are doing actively right now. There's a lot of sustainability work going on in Atlanta. A lot of people just aren't being able to, or given the platform to showcase it or speak about it. And so people in our community have no idea that these things are happening.
Yeah.
Or if they do, you have to work 10 times harder just to make sure that everybody knows about it. And so, you know, the more things that we do like this, and thankfully this platform exists, Brother Oshie, you know, and thanks to you and, you know, your team, that it gives people that are doing the sustainable work and the work that, you know, has the possibility to change, you know, the perspective of a lot of people's existence. We're a first world country that has people living in third world standards right here in the United States.
Right on, Apollo. First world country with third world standards, and that's for real. That's for real. So what's happening in Jackson now? How is the situation? I know it's been alleviated to some degree, a small degree, but it's still, the issue is very prevalent. And they got money. The state of Mississippi, and that's hard, you know, people know Mississippi. That's hard to say. Go ahead.
I have to get Brother Oshie. I have to get Mr. Kitchens on for that one, so okay. He can really give you,
okay,
you
yeah,
know, the ground up, you know,
yeah,
story of what's happening.
Yeah, we need to
but
talk to
I'll
him
tell
again.
You this, though, you know, yeah, definitely. I could, and we could definitely put that together too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things is too, from his perspective, what he told us recently, is that, you know, they have formed a collaborative approach with several other farmers and organizations that are trying to provide resources. Because think about it, the catfish farmers, right?
Mm-hmm.
The catfish farmers grow catfish in a field where the water, where the dirt is contaminated due to 40, 50 years of fertilizer use. And so what happens is the catfish are in this water, this mud that you would say, I guess. And
don't want to eat those. Don't want to eat that.
Can't eat them.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so that the catfish farming is a very lucrative business, and the loss of inventory is a very big problem.
Yeah.
But then in addition to that, think of it's the other farmers that exist in the area that don't have water resources because they don't have water resources, they can't grow their crops.
Yeah.
These are some of the things that we're looking to target because, you know, we have already knocked on the municipality's door and let them know this is a solution, and they still chose water bottles. So, you know, at that point, you know, we don't come knocking twice. You know, at the end of the day, there's 6-something billion people around the world that need water. You know, the goal is to make sure that we help the people that want to be helped and that can be helped immediately in the fastest way possible.
Yeah. Wow. Brother Irv.
Baba Oshie, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Go ahead.
Brother, you are amazing, man. And what you're saying about the companies that you go to and they don't come back to you, don't fret, my brother. They're going to be knocking at your door before it's all over. Believe me, they're going to be knocking at your door because the water bottles have a certain amount of plastic in the water, from what I understand.
PFAS through and through.
That's correct. So eventually, that's going to cause problems. When I first came to Baltimore, when I came back to Baltimore, they were charging you to pick up your recyclables. They would and if you didn't put them out, they'd fine you. And I kept saying, well, if I bought this plastic, why do I have to give it to you? Because in the old days, remember when things came in glass bottles and you would get a deposit for the glass bottle? We would actually collect bottles and turn them in for the 5-cent deposit that you would get for each bottle.
That was a hustle. When I was a kid.
Yeah.
That was a hustle.
Come on now. But the plastic, you give it to them, and they sell it, or they take it and dump it in somebody else's land or something to that effect. This other brother has figured out how to make this into fuel. So now, and the part I like about, and I'm telling you this, I mean this, I came back on to say this, that I really love about you and this brother is that you're going against the status quo. You're not in this motivated by money. We're going to make a bunch of money, and we're going to be rich, and everybody else is going to look at us and say, damn, they got a lot of money. That's not your objective, brother. You're not out here to look good, drive a big car, build a big house. Of course, you want to live somewhere and have things too, but that's not your main objective, to make all this money to be, you know, like the cat that owns Amazon. He got $172 billion. Huh? Who? That's a small country, brother. But because your motivation isn't money, you're going to be successful. As a matter of fact, you're already successful because people are not asking you to buy it. They're asking you, I will give to this GoFundMe page just because I know that your motivation is right. Your mind is right. You're trying to help people instead of trying to help yourself. And brother, that is huge on both of you parts. That
right
is huge.
Yeah.
That is too big. Thank you. Thank you for letting me say that.
Right on earth. Appreciate you, man. Yeah. He's right, brother.
Appreciate you, sir.
Yeah. Brother Moses West and with his representative, Brother Apollo, who's been communicating with me for many years now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now that we hooked up with Julian Brown and what he's doing, man, this is fantastic. This is really fantastic to know that even though these things are happening, and when they're on the news and they talk about the situation, it seems, you know, very dire, and it is, and very hopeless, but it's not, because there are people like Julian and like Moses and others who are finding ways to correct the problem for all humanity, are finding ways to turn bad situations into something good. And y'all need to be supported, not just applauded, but supported, you know. So, yeah. I tell you, thank you. Thank you. And so, talking about Moses, though, in what he's doing with the atmospheric water generator and developing more machines, and because, like I said, the situation really it's all over, especially in the Midwest and the Northeast, because those water systems are very, you know, antiquated, and they have been in existence for a long time. You know, the pipes and so forth, the corrosion and everything like that. You know, some people turn the tap on and the water comes out brown, you know. And so that problem now can be alleviated, can be corrected, you know, because there is no water shortage. The only problem with water is access to clean water. And there is a way to develop the access to clean water, because Moses West's machine is portable. You know, he took the machine that was in Flint, Michigan, took it, I think at the time he was in Texas, and retooled it, and then sent it over to Jackson, Mississippi. You know, how many machines do they have in Jackson, Mississippi? I'm adding, or should I talk to Cammy Quick Kitchens about that, Brother Apollo?
Yes, sir. Sorry about that. I didn't realize I was muted. My apologies.
Okay. Yeah, I was saying, how many machines are presently in Mississippi?
The one that Moses wanted to leave there, he couldn't leave there because they were saying that so the whole purpose of bringing a unit there was to be connected to an assisted living facility. But due to all of the red tape, after a period of time, he had to bring it back to Chicago. And so what we're currently doing is working with Mr. Kitchens and various different organizational bodies that exist out there to get this approved as an alternative water resource, so that way it can be provided to not only Mr. Kitchens' facility and those people there, but also all the people in that area that need them.
Wow. Man, I'm about to cuss, because I do cuss on this program. But no, that's some bullshit. That could be done so easily. You know,
you would think so, right,
yes.
Brother Oshi? You know,
yes.
how many months has it been? How many years has it
yes.
been trying? Think about it.
Wow. And they got money. Money has been allocated. Money has been directed from the federal government and state. But I know that the governor and Brother Chukwe Lumumba's son, who's the mayor, have been at odds. You know, but still, you're playing with people's lives. You're playing with a necessity that people need to survive. Water is essential. Man.
Brother Oshi, Julian has to jump to a meeting real quick. Julian, go ahead and say goodbye real quick.
Okay, bro. Well, Julian, you had any closing comments or words, my brother? I have your number.
Yes.
I'll be calling you, so you can set this up. But go ahead, Julian.
First of all, thank you so much, Brother Oshi, for having me on. I truly appreciate it. And to everybody listening, I want to thank you all for tuning in and listening. And for Brother Irvin, I appreciate you for really believing in me and saying that you were going to donate to the GoFundMe. Ultimately, the goal is pretty much just like he said. I want to make this monetizable. I want to make it a trend to recycle. I want people to be able to be paid to bring in their plastic to turn it into fuel. So I have the same. For as long as I walk this earth, plastic will no longer be seen as trash, but as untapped potential energy.
I say, right on, untapped potential energy. Thanks a lot, Brother Julian Bond. I'll be talking with you very soon, okay?
All right.
Have a blessed and wonderful day.
Have a blessed day, you too.
All right, peace. We, brothers and sisters, definitely thank the young man and thank Brother Apollo for setting this up. And I know last week when he approached me, I had a guest already. I had Brother Ayo Kamathi in talking about his books. I couldn't do it, but he said he can come on today. And I said, let's do it. Let's do it. And I appreciate it, man. And giving you an update, too, about what's happening with Moses West, and particularly in Mississippi and other parts. I was at a conference, and they talked about sustainability and so forth. And, of course, I mentioned the Moses West Foundation. I said, this is not the solution, but it is part of a solution. No doubt part of a solution when you can develop, put a machine there and develop and have clean, drinkable, usable water. For whatever you need water for, you want to do aquaponics, you know. So for industrial use, we mentioned earlier, even with Brother Julian, that the water sometimes regular tap water from the city and the processes go through is not still good enough, especially for various factory use. You need it to be, I'm not sure what the process might be, but it has to be cleaner because it, especially if you're dealing with microchips and stuff like that, I don't know. But there's a lot of things that go into it. And the process by which these guys work has helped to make that happen. And that's a blessing. That's a blessing for humanity. Yeah. So, is Moses, Brother Apollo, is Moses in town? Not in town, but is he in the country?
Yeah, he is.
He's in Chicago now? Is that where he is?
Yep. Okay. Yep, he's in Chicago now. And what we're doing is we're preparing to, so he's been working these past few months on one of the things is a lot of people always say, hey, you know, we want to come see the machine, interact with the machine, and so forth. And so what Moses is doing is he's similar to the unit that was brought to Flint and to Vieques, Puerto Rico. He's building one of those, and he spent like almost 6 days every week in the facility working on it.
Okay.
There's building an AWG 5000 that'll be a display unit that can be shown around the country. So that way, the one that does like 5000 and up, basically we can bring that around the country to show people. And also in emergency resources or necessities, it can go somewhere and provide like up to 20,000 people water for months.
Wow. Now that machine, where do y'all put it on a flatbed truck?
Yep, it would go in a truck, like kind of like a, it'd go with the truck head. And it's a 20-foot ISO container. So it would be preferably is best to leave it on there, but it could be like stood up by itself as well.
Okay. And, of course, it has to be outside because it has to take moisture that is in the air. you know?
Well, yes, yes, definitely outside for something of that size for sure. But for agricultural purposes, like people that grow hydroponically or things like that,
okay,
or grow food or farm hydroponically, by placing this unit inside during like the colder periods, it can operate even in winter.
Wow. Okay, didn't know that. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, the plants basically give off a moisture on their own, and then the unit would pull that, provide water, and then put that water into the soil. And
it's like a recycling.
It's like
a recycling, yeah. You know? Man.
Point-specific water production, Brother Oshi.
What do they call it again?
Point-specific water production.
Point-specific water production, yes. Man, okay. Yeah, to create that water directly for aquaponics or other use. Man. So, I mean, you know, once again, I can't say it enough about the African genius, about brothers and sisters who come together and, you know, use their minds and think of a better way to make things happen for humanity. You know, use their minds to create, and of course, hopefully they'll be able to patent them so they can benefit from them and their families can benefit from them for decades, you know. And I tell you, but this thing that Brother Julian has created is going to be it's going to be the future. And I need to, I'm going to give him a call because I haven't seen anything on the local stations about what he has done. And the community needs to hear about it. They need to be aware of it. They need to know that there are young people who are doing great things. You know, they are doing fantastic things to benefit. And I tell you, that's tough. That is really dynamic. Yeah. So we got 10 minutes left. Anybody out there, you still got a number of people in the queue once again. Oh, let me check Jay. Jay, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Listen, I'll pass.
Okay, Brother Jay. Appreciate you, man.
All right.
Have a good day. Okay. One of our regular callers must have just chimed in. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, I got a lot of people now who I know that just want to listen. You know, and there are other people who I don't see on the screen who are, they tune in to Time for an Awakening, because now you can, once again, brothers and sisters, you just go right to Time for an Awakening. You don't go to TuneIn, because TuneIn provides or cuts away to commercials. You go to Time for an Awakening. When you look at the Time for an Awakening, you see on the right side the link, and you turn and you hit that to play, and there will be the broadcast, commercial-free, of replayed programs and live programs. So, yep, Time for an Awakening. I'm planning to talk with Brother Junior and to support him as well. That's the thing, that the more of us who support things that we do, and put the effort into it, then the likelihood of us maintaining that is greater, you know, because sometimes we get bought out, you know. I remember in our community back in the late 60s and the 70s, we were owning the stores. Especially after the Germans, the Jews, or whoever else, we were owning those stores in our community. And unfortunately, the young people of those families, they didn't want to to maintain the stores. So Koreans, Indians, and Arabs start moving in, and they came with money, and we started selling them. I don't know what a community that you may live as you're listening to me, but there are many communities where we don't own convenience stores no more. Here in Atlanta, We don't own one service station where we have a convenience store. I'm serious. We don't own a supermarket. We don't own a supermarket. We got plenty of restaurants and beauty shops and barber shops and other kinds of stores. But we don't own a supermarket. That's why We Buy Black has been having a campaign for us to donate to buy us to create a supermarket. And that's still very short of what they've been asking for, and that's been now for years. There has to come a point in time, dear family, that when you hear about what's happening with Julian Brown, when you hear about what's happening with Moses West, they need to be supported by us. By us. Sacrifices need to be made. When you hear about We Buy Black, and they're talking about, please help to donate so we can have a soup. You know, I sometimes would drive around and go to a subdivision or, you know, and they have to travel 10, 15 minutes, 20 minutes to go to a strip mall or whatever that's outside of that community. Not saying that everybody in that subdivision is black and they got money. They have beautiful manicured lawns. I'm quite sure the inside of those places are immaculate. But yet they never said and had the idea. Said, let's pull some money together and buy that strip of land there and put a strip mall there and have stores there so we can employ our kids, give them an idea of business. When I first came here to Atlanta, I had some health issues, and so I was living in DeKalb County in Tucker, and near me was Atlanta Medical. And so I was going there, but in that area, in that neighborhood, are Indians, and they had a number of stores, and they even had a strip mall. They had a strip mall that had an appliance store, sit-down restaurant, takeout restaurant, convenience store, supermarket, clothing store, you name it, whatever that is that they needed, they had it. And we ain't got nothing like that here in Atlanta. And they had other jewelry stores, you know, and stuff in that particular immediate area. And last year, towards the end of the year, I was in that area. I drove by there to see how it's still going. Because I've been here almost 10 years now. And that's when I first moved here. Still going strong. They support it. The community support it. The Indians of in that area or even outside of that area come there to support it. Now, of course, in talking about what Brother Julian Brown has done and what Brother Moses West has done, that's not specific. That cuts across everything. That's for humanity, and everybody has an opportunity to support that, and I would be pleased if they did so. You know, I would be very pleased if they did so. But I tell you, family, you know, we have opportunities sometimes that we don't take advantage of, and we definitely need to support. Brother Apollo, are you still
yes,
with
sir.
Me? Yeah. Well, listen, I thank you, man. I thank you for turning me on to Brother Julian Brown and that young man, just 20 years old, man. Love his spirit, and of course to Brother Moses West and the great work that he's doing, you know, and to keep me abreast of things. I'll try to get a hold of Cammie Kitchens. I met him. I was in Jackson. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was in Jackson, and me and him, we met at the conference that they had there, and that was great. meeting Brother Cam Kitchens and the work that he's doing. And on behalf of Brother Moses West. Yeah. So,
one more time, Brother Oshie?
Yeah. Okay. You have to jump to another meeting. So.
Yeah, but that's all right. That's all right. Either way, I did want to say thank you for having us. And thank you for always, you know, creating a platform of learning, education, and, you know, community outreach.
Always. I'm definitely committed to what these two brothers are doing, Brother Moses West, for sure. I mean, let's be real. It's about water, you know. How could you not be, you know? It's about water, the elixir of life. And mm-hmm. here's, you know, when everybody's maybe talking about doom and gloom about water and wanted to monetize water, in fact, wanted to make water like $10 a gallon, crazy shit like
also,
that.
Also, Brother Ocean, want to just let the listeners know, too, that if they want to learn more about Moses' missions and what it is he's been doing so far, too, the Moses West, like MosesWestFoundation.org or www.MosesWestFoundation.org. I believe that we just recently did a website update, and so we updated a lot of the information, the images, the videos, and everything like that on it to really share with some of the viewers and the listeners and the readers what our day-to-day is like and what our goals and our mission is.
Right on. Because I go to the website, and I once again, I present Moses West Foundation every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on this radio program, and we'll continue to do so and support it. Thank you, Brother Apollo.
Thank you, Brother Apollo. It's much appreciated. Always. Thank you very much, sir.
Peace. Mm-hmm. Brothers and sisters, we're thankful that there are entities within our community that we can know that we can go to and utilize. And I tell you, it's a blessing. It's a blessing. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure as hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shemhotep, that means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Peace, family.